From 1968 to 1972, John Fogerty was the creative force behind one of the biggest bands in the world, Creedence Clearwater Revival. Some of the hits, but the band did not last long. In 1972, CCR imploded, and for years, John Fogerty was in legal battles with his former label, Fantasy Records, and record executive Saul Zantz. He writes about this in his new memoir, Fortunate Son, My Life, My Music, and he joins us now. John Fogerty, welcome, and reading this book, people might be surprised to learn that you were not born on the bayou. You actually grew up in El Cerrito, California. So where did this southern sound come from?
Well, some of this is a little mystical, but I was very influenced by Southern music growing up, and also just the movies and plays that I've seen over the years where many things were coming from Southern culture. I just seemed to be fascinated. I gravitated toward that.
Well, you started playing with Doug Clifford and Stu Cook when you were in the eighth grade. You were later joined by your older brother, Tom, to form what would eventually become Creedence Clearwater Revival, or CCR. Did you figure at any point during that time that you were going to become an international sensation with this exact group?
I'm not sure how I pictured myself exactly. Although when I was 8 years old, I had a fantasy of what my group would be. There was, of course, a new car had come on the scene, the Chevy Corvette. And so I had named myself Johnny Corvette, and I was going to be Johnny Corvette and the Corvettes. And we would be standing there all in matching jackets, kind of like the Penguins, you know, a group like that. And later, you know, as I began to actually pick up guitar and bang on the piano, then the dream of music took on a lot more layers, a lot more little facets that I couldn't have imagined when I was 8 years old.
Now, the first big hit for Creedence Clearwater Revival was Susie Q. Can you tell us the story of how that came together, how that song came together?
Let's see. I had just gotten out of the Army, or active duty anyway, in the summer of 67. And there was a brand new radio station in San Francisco called KMPX. It was basically the world's first underground station. And occasionally they would play an unpublished or unreleased tape. And it was my idea to kind of make a tape that they would play as a calling card. And I spent a lot of time arranging an old song, Susie Q, of course. And so I arranged the heck out of it, you know, kind of on a long, long piece of paper, basically, because I don't write or read music. I did it sort of with pictures. Huh. And we rehearsed and played that song, you know, over and over for literally weeks. And then I set out to add all the little goodies, you might say. That's kind of how that came about. It was basically to fit into the mode of what that station was playing.
Oh, Susie Q. Oh, Susie Q. Oh, Susie Q. Baby, I love you. Susie Q.
And you still don't write or read music?
Not in the formal sense, no. I can, you know, peck my way through certain things. I mean, as a child, I actually learned the song, the opening strains of Rachmaninoff's, I don't know, that famous song of Rachmaninoff. La, la, boom, blah, boom, blah. You know, a lot of chords and stuff. But I had to kind of place my fingers one at a time. I couldn't just look at the page and everything came out of me. I can't do that still.
One of the songs you write about in this book is one that all of our listeners probably know. I want to just play a little bit of it here. This is Proud Mary. When when you recorded this, you wanted backup vocals, but your bandmates weren't giving you the sound that you wanted, so you ended up recording the vocals yourself.
Yes. Of course, I had taught the other guys in the band what would be the background vocals for Proud Mary. Remember, Proud Mary, I should really stress, was the first really, really good song that I had written. And I knew it at the time. I mean, that afternoon when it came about, I was basically having a sort of a religious experience. It was, oh my goodness, this thing's, you know, I was very excited because I knew that it was very good.
You wanted it to be perfect.
In other words, I was kind of precious about it. Yes, I was very careful. And so when I heard the guys singing back, you know, what we had done in the studio, it sounded more along the lines of what we had done on a song called Porterville. The vocals were very sort of harsh and I want to say jagged, meaning you could hear all the individual voices. They didn't blend together in that wonderful way that a gospel quartet would do. And I wanted Proud Mary to have that sound.
Do you look back at all, though, with any regret about how you handled your bandmates, how you went through all of that? And do you think there's anything that could have been done to keep the band together?
That's a very large question. Other than me caving, you know, at that moment and giving in and going, well, okay, I guess that's good enough. I don't know how that could have been different. I actually think that what made the band great was those times when I insisted that we rise to a certain level of quality. A little later in the band, the history of the band, of course, I did give in. and that's basically when everything sort of came to a screeching halt. It was the end of 1970, and the band insisted on writing their own original songs and singing those songs. And so I did capitulate. Remarkably, within a couple of, just a few weeks of that moment, that's when my brother Tom actually left the band.
You also, and you write about this in the book, Fortunate Son, had a difficult relationship with your record label, to say the least. They ended up suing you, saying essentially that you had plagiarized yourself with the song, your solo song, The Old Man Down the Road.
You got the hidey, 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 the old man.
That was plagiarizing Run Through the Jungle.
It'll run through the jungle. It'll run through the jungle.
To punish me, Saul and Fantasy decided to stop paying me for any songs, not just the one song that was in contention, but for any of the songs I had written, which was basically the entire Creedence catalog, which they owned. So they were, you know, really adding salt to the wound, you might say. So it was not until sometime really in the this new millennium, I was starting to write a song that eventually became Creedence song. Every time I would start down that path, this little demon, kind of a little lawyer demon, would pop up on my shoulder and start to say things like, well, you can't do that. You're going to get sued. I'm going to sue you. This particular day when I was working on this song that became Creedence song eventually, that little devil popped up on my shoulder again. And for some reason, this time, I had the strength to actually say, you go away from here. You don't belong here. I never want to see you again. And it went away, and I haven't been bothered since.
Night after night, people coming up to the bandstand. Say you can't go wrong if you play a little bit of that crazy song.
One other thing I've got to ask you about after reading this is you clearly are deeply in love with your wife, Julie. You've been married since 1991, I believe. Yes. And you actually wrote a song specifically for her that after not playing any CCR songs for well over a decade and then coming to the point where you were able to make music again thanks to her.
Well, actually, the period of time I didn't play those songs was about 25 years, with maybe two exceptions. But yes, I was lucky enough to meet my wife, Julie, in 1986. And clearly my heart was healing, and I began to be able to say things like, well, you know, I know at one point I would say, honey, one day with you is worth 20 years in hell. Hmm. Therefore, worrying about anything else is pretty incidental, meaning, yes, somebody stole my songs. At some point, somebody stole a lot of money, same guy, actually. But it all pales in comparison to the wonder and the beauty of having love in your life. So I feel that I'm the luckiest man in the world because of that.
You consider yourself a fortunate son?
Yes, sir.
John Fogerty, the book is called Fortunate Son, My Life, My Music. Of course, we know him very well from Creedence Clearwater Revival. John Fogerty, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
And we've got an excerpt at hereandnow.org.